Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
A low rent operation we're running here. If you had to compare this show to how normal shows work, like almost every other radio show you hear is like that scene in The Sound of Music where they're doing the puppet show, right? And you're watching it from the front. Live from the Path is you're watching it from behind. Yeah. Saying, you can see everybody with the scales and with the strings and what they're moving and the costume changes. That's just kind of how it rolls.
All right. This is Ben Foost. You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. These Pathway Studios are just limping along. As a matter of fact, we're getting out of here.
Yeah, we are.
This is the last weekend here. We're moving somewhere else. I can't take this crap anymore. Internet buffering. That's low scale. We just got Shop Talk on the show tonight. We've been busy. We've had a lot of stuff going on. Had a lot of bands coming over the last few weeks. And so I think we just got general, hey, what's happening? What's going on in your life? What's going on in the world type of stuff? Sit back and have a conversation with some fellas tonight. Mike said he saw some things in the news. I might have some Pope style. There's an interesting book I'm reading. I thought I'd share a little bit of that with you guys.
Is it the Bible?
No, sir.
That's an interesting book.
No, sir, it isn't. that's what we got going on. If you're new to the program, this may or may not be the show for you. I suppose if whatever we got going on, you feel like you're disappointed in, maybe you have a good picture of what we do here, and it's time to leave and find better things to do with your time. So anyway, that's what we got going on, Life from the Path. Before we actually ruin the episode, I wanted to give a big shout-out to our sponsors. Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Here's the deal. Bob Eisenhower got hold of me today. I love this man. I feel like it could be just me, right? But I think it's everybody. He's got me going on the back of his mind. Some guy was like getting ready to bulldoze a house at a property in Carlisle. And it's sitting on like 8 acres. And he's like, hey, man, this sounds like a Ben Foost type of property. So he says, look, guy, this guy's going to doze this stuff tomorrow. You want in or not? And I thought, I love this, Bob. I checked with the wife, and she was not in.
Oh, man.
So I had to let it go. But, I mean, here's the deal. He pegged me correctly. This property that he picked out, and that he thought, like, it's on the edge of whether someone reasonably want or not, but it seems like it could be some opportunity in it. It's in my general lowball price range. And Bob thought Ben Foost might want it, and he was correct. So anyway, Bob Eisenhower is the man. He helps you with buying or selling a home. Go to theeisenhowerteam.com and get a hold of Bob. You can email him there. His phone number's out there. Give him a call. And he's just the guy to go to. He's a trustworthy dude. We use him for our real estate stuff, and I will totally vouch for that guy. And get a hold of him. Now's the time to do it, probably, if you're looking to buy or sell a house. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can set up your appointments online for all your pet care needs, dogs, cats, chickens, whatever. They also do large animals.
Maybe a baboon. I don't know if they've had a baboon in there or not.
No. But if you got one and it needs help, take it in. You don't want to be caught with a sick baboon. I feel like, you know what like monkey or ape type creatures do when they're happy. Yeah. I'd hate to know what's going on when they're upset or have a nasty tummy. So anyway, take that baboon in. You don't want any trouble. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. I don't know why they continue to pay us. All right. So we're going on the show tonight. So I'll tell you what I've been reading. So last week, I don't remember what it is. We were talking about some of the ISIS stuff, and there was kind of a conversation about Muslims and stuff, and how getting them to know Jesus. And I thought I don't know anything about this. Like I don't know where they would be coming from, and I don't know. I have a rough idea what they believe, but maybe I don't. Right? Like I know what other people have said they believe. But I don't really have a good handle on what they believe, and that's true for a lot of the sects or other religions. Like I could give you some brief talking points, but like if there was a guy that was really passionate about Islam, like I would be a farce to him, right? My talking points don't mean anything to him. That guy's living his life based upon this thing. It means what? Just like the bullet pointed Christianity is nowhere near the depth that I would talk about my relationship with Christ. And so what I was afraid of is that I had let laziness otherwise dictate what I know about people. What I know about what they believe and what they think is important. So I thought, I feel like I need to rectify that to a certain extent. I took a half step. I didn't jump into the Quran. But there was a book that a guy wrote who was he was a Muslim, and he said his book was looking for Allah, finding Jesus, and it was about his journey of being a Muslim, and then through his digging deeper into his faith, he came to find Christ. And I thought, okay, that sounds like a guy who's going to represent his faith correctly, the Muslim faith correctly, and then show me kind of the transition from that point. And I'm giving the benefit of the doubt here. So far, it's just been a very interesting book. And I think it validates what I was otherwise concerned about, that I was potentially misrepresenting someone because I wasn't close enough to be able to know what was just someone's brief overview or section of how certain people act versus, you know, what was someone's intimate relationship with their faith. And I think that's probably true of Hindus. I think it's probably true of all the different faiths that people pursue, is that we need to be careful. If they're going to find, if you want to introduce them to Christ, and they have a deep faith in something, like, you kind of have to meet them with what they're looking for, right? They're looking for something, or there's some part of their identity that's tied to that faith. And if you don't understand that correctly, like, you're really not going to have the opportunity to allow them to see Jesus for what it is that they're searching for. And so anyway, I guess I don't really have a bunch of commentary on that. I don't have anything to add to the world with that. But I guess it was something that I've been thinking about. And maybe it's the warning to be careful. Be careful. Like, here's what I know for a fact is that, like, me and a Muslim guy don't believe the same thing completely. Mm-hmm. In fact, we differ on a pretty strong thing that I find important. Okay? That's true for a lot of the major religions that aren't Jesus. However, you run a risk by painting those people as flat, by acting like they're not people, that there isn't depth to their faith, and it doesn't mean something to their life. That's a serious risk. And they won't see Jesus if you're approaching them as if they're someone to be bullied, someone to be swayed, a talking point to be changed.
I think it's kind of like, you know, when Hollywood does a Christian movie and all the Christians get all offended and angry because, well, you totally misrepresented us. Well, most of them think they probably actually did some research. They just researched some obscure thing that they thought that they don't know if it's true because most of them aren't people of our faith.
Right, exactly.
And when we got all offended, like, don't you even know? It's like, well, no, they don't.
No, they don't.
They don't. So they really thought maybe they were rock people in the Noah movie. I mean, there's some Jewish sect that kind of has that as part of their tradition.
Yeah.
They happen to interview that guy, you know, and I'd never heard of that in my life until I'd seen some interview.
A lot of that's true with, like, it's the squeakiest wheel, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, look at all the minority opinion holders that you're talking about here. The minority opinion holder put the rock people in the Noah movie. The minority of the Christians got mad about it, and then the minority caused a big stink about it and are protesting things, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, these are all small sects of what is normally, like, they don't show on the evening news that, like, you know, there's a bunch of us down at the soup kitchen or something, right? But they will show the guy that's picking in a funeral because he's the minority and he's loud.
And
the same is true with the Muslims, right? Like, when you watch a news story, they're like, the Muslim faith, blah, 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 blah. It's the minority causing a huge stink over there when most of them are like, hey, look, man, that's not us. No one interviewed me. I don't want these guys here either, you know, because they're, I mean, religion or not, like, they're just people trying to live, right? And we have the same amount of folks within the body of Christ as we do in the Muslim community that are like, you know, they're not really full-fledged crazy folks. They're just people trying to live out their faith and do it honorably. And you don't hear from those guys. You only hear from the nutsos, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, how much experience any of you guys have had. Okay, this is going to sound pompous, of, like, being interviewed by the media. Dan, I mean, you've had that.
I love it, yeah.
And so, but, like, you never recognize yourself how someone has represented you in the media. Even, I mean, there are things that you said. Sometimes it's things that you've said that they've kind of tuned a little bit. Sometimes it's not at all, or they've put a context around it that wasn't what you said. But, like, I mean, I've done a number of media things for when we were in a band. And, like, it always seemed like they were talking about something else. And it's interesting, the main way that we the news is a business, right? That, like, it's people's job to for people to be interested and pick it up, and they create the interest. And I think we have to be very careful about the types of information that we get about people and events from someone who's ultimately trying to sell you something, right? I'm not saying that there's not journalism that is thumbs up. That there are legit journalists, right? But ultimately, they don't tell non-stories. They tell stories. And a non-story is a guy that works hard, submits to his faith, and lives a quiet life. And that's a lot of people. And then there's other people that make noise and that do things that are on the peripheral. And the peripheral guys are the exciting news. The guy that acts outside the norm, the guy whose actions are offensive to someone else, like, that's it. Again, I'm not justifying how other people act. I'm not saying that there's legitimacy to things that aren't Christ. But what I'm saying is that, like, for them to see Jesus, you have to treat them like people.
And you got to know how to communicate
exactly
to them. It's kind of like you go to an evangelism training seminar or something, or you read a book on sharing your faith, and you're trying to, you know, this is the 14 characteristics of unchurched Harry and Mary, you know, and now you're looking for that in everybody, and it's like they're just some person who's working next to you that you could just start a conversation
right
with. You know, you don't have to have the seven conversation starters that are in the book, you know, and it kind of is very... It's just not very genuine.
No, right. And you know what we treat it like? We treat it like people that don't love Jesus went to school on how to not love Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
So that we can grab the characteristics.
Well, I know you're a pagan.
Like, yeah. They got a handbook of how to be lazy about not actually loving anything.
Well, I know we're enemies and all, but I'd like to try to bridge that gap a little bit today.
Yeah. And you know, maybe there's danger in that, even as a Christian community, it's not that there isn't truth to some of those things describing these people, right? But
sure.
But it's that we've tried to we treat people who don't know Jesus as if they are a broad, cohesive group of folk.
Yeah, that they know each other. They have meetings. They're very hard up on making sure that they don't know him.
Right, and that, as opposed to the fact that there's a guy sitting next to me who doesn't know Jesus, and he's an intricate man, right? He has marriage issues. He loves softball.
Trying to pay his bills.
Yeah, and he drinks Bud Light. And that's the guy. That's not in the 12 steps to point him to Christ. But he's an individual, and he has a story, and I have a life that I can share with him, and that can help him understand Christ, as opposed to these blanket... Like, actually, that's where that pamphlet, the culture comes from, right? Everybody believes the same thing incorrectly. All we got to do is correct their wrong thinking, and things will be just fine. Things will be just fine. I feel like the example of Christ spending any time on earth at all would validate that it requires time to be able to try to communicate something, right? Because, I mean, he could have done an air pamphlet. He could have done the airplane before the airplane was cool and, like, dragged a banner across the fling and Jesus is Lord, thumbs up, call it a day.
Flying around with a banner behind him.
You don't
look
even,
at this.
There, combat that miracle. You don't even know what that is. Anyway, that's what I got going. So, hear me clearly. Don't open up your mind to heresy, but be open to the fact that there are people behind every belief, and they believe that for one reason or another. And until you understand why they believe those things, what you have to say about Jesus is going to sound irrelevant to them.
Yeah, you got to get to know them as a human being first.
Yeah.
And
all right. I don't know. That's what I got going on.
Actually, the news story that I was looking at this week actually fell kind of on those lines. It's about misunderstanding a group of people, and I feel like misunderstanding your role as the church. But we'll read through it and see what you guys think. I kind of fell down real heavy on one side of this thing. But this story came out of Ohio. Exotic dancers from an Ohio strip club protested topless outside a church Sunday and engaged in a few heated verbal exchanges with church members. Dancers from the Foxhole, a club, staged the protest outside the New Beginnings Ministries in nearby Warsaw, a church the club owner says has protested his business for years. At one point, the ladies came out to the corner edge of the church. They were dressed in various stages, and they were holding around, walking around signs, about 30 people, and they were protesting the place. There were tarps that shield the rear of the church, which most congregation members entered and exited. Several women came out of the church after services and exchanged words with the club sympathizers. In a telephone interview Sunday, the club owner told the Associated Press that club dancers in bikinis protested and held signs outside the church, but they didn't stop the church from picketing his business. He says, "I don't have a problem with people expressing their First Amendment rights, but at what point does it become harassment?" said George, who apologized to the public and other churches for Sunday's protest. "But they backed us in a corner, and we have no recourse at law." He said judges have repeatedly denied his request for injunctions to keep church protesters away from his property. The pastor told the Tribune recently that the church members will persist in opposing the club. "We know what we're doing is working," he said. He couldn't be reached for comment on Sunday. No phone listening for him was available, and a recording at the church said voicemail couldn't accept messages.
Okay.
So the entire gist of the story is that you know, obviously the church found that the strip club was a source of a moral reprehensible behavior, and they started to protest it and cause a stink, and the strip club turned around and protested the church. And I thought, isn't this an exact picture of what you get when you protest morality like that is you get people blaming God for stupid things that you've done. You know what I'm saying? Like, I agree. We're not for the strip club. Like, on the whole, it'd be better if it wasn't there, right? But what you have there is a building full of people who are trying to fill a hole that they just can't fill with what they're doing, right? They're missing Christ in their life, and they're acting in ways that are apart from the Bible. I agree with that, right? But, like, that should be all the more reason for you to talk to them and engage with them and figure out what's going on. But, like, protesting and doing it as a moral high ground, like, what you've done is created a situation where people believe that God is against them, and that is not the truth. He's against maybe some things that they're doing, but, like, I don't know. I feel like it portrayed completely the wrong message.
Well, once you start protesting anything, where do you stop? I mean, let's say the strip club goes away. Well, then what? They're okay with all the other sin going on? I mean, you can't stop ever because there's always something to protest.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
and there's going to continue to be, right? It is a fallen, sinful world.
Exactly.
You're going to protest your own sin? I don't see you holding up a 24-hour vigil at your own place when you told a lie to your boss that day. You know what I'm saying? Standing outside your own door going, Mike's a liar. You know, like, it seems completely unfair and completely outside of the scope of the way that Jesus taught about the kingdom of God, right? Like, yeah. I mean, he always called sin a sin. Let's not mince words here. Like, he called a sin, sin. He doesn't avoid that subject, but right, the people that he talked to and the way that his message was preached was not it wasn't the law, right? That's exactly what it wasn't, and I don't know how. I guess I misunderstand my place in the kingdom of God, but I have a really hard time trying to teach people about God based on morality because I feel like that's not Him. He's the source of any good thing in me, and right, like without Him, then it is checks and balances, and then I got real trouble.
I think this is one of those just surprising things about Jesus that is just radical. It's mind-blowing. I mean, it's expected that Jesus, the world's greatest moral teacher, would also be someone who would love sinful people. But now we've also got this paradigm where apparently sinful people loved Jesus, the world's greatest moral teacher, and sinful people wanted to be around him, loved him, wanted to hang out with him. Prostitutes, tax collectors, all these just icky people that you would consider, they wanted to be around Jesus. So why has that not transferred to our churches?
Well, that's a really solid question.
Maybe because we're not really acting like Jesus.
I don't know. Listen, I can't say that I haven't made the mistake in judging somebody based on the way that their life is going. But frankly, sometimes it's just they're just points to a fact, right? Like, if I see certain amounts of behavior in somebody's life, then I can say, look, I feel like as a pattern that you're without Jesus. That would be my guess, right? Judging by the pattern in your life, I can kind of guess that. That may sound judgmental, but it's just kind of the truth, right? But on the whole, I just can't imagine looking at somebody and, like, portraying, you know, the body of Christ as, like, listen, we're against you. You know, like you can't talk to them. Here's what you need. Here's what you need is people that are strong enough to be in that strip club. And to be making some connections and making some community and making some friends and actually giving two craps about them, why they are involved in what they're involved with, what their life looks like, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, granted, there's not a whole lot of dudes that can go in there. You send some ladies
true.
In there,
yeah,
and do that job. But I mean, you're gaining so much more ground than you are with the sign. It just doesn't make any headway either way.
The concept of any kind of picketing of anything from a Christ follower's perspective makes absolutely no sense to me. I do not see it. I don't see how you can read through the Bible, read through Jesus coming and the good news of the kingdom of God, and then see someone go, I'm going to take that, and that means I'm going to go around to the people that do not have any concept of Jesus as their king, as their Lord, as their son of God, as the son of God, and then go, I'm going to call them out for their sin. It makes no sense.
Yeah, they
just
should
don't
act
understand
that
it.
Way if they're not Christ
followers.
That's
right. Followers. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. So really, we should be picketing that church as well. I'm going to get myself a Speedo, and I'm going to show up, and I'm going to be on their front
that.
Yard.
That's obscene. Don't do that.
That I just is obscene.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't understand. Even going beyond this, you know, you see at Planned Parenthood places, you see this at abortion centers, you see this at all kinds of places when it comes to certain bars and all this different stuff. You see people that have these signs that are so incredibly hateful to the people. Yeah. It's not the sin that they're calling out. It's the people doing the sinning. And that makes no sense. I don't see how you can read the same Bible that I have and get, I'm going to call everyone out on their sin because of the fact that they're doing it. And it's not I'm going to have a relationship with this person. It's not that I'm going to meet this person so that I can speak into their life and see how I can reflect the love of Christ onto their lives and show them that, guess what? This is only the start of it. This is only the smallest portion of your existence. I promise you there's something beyond this if you accept that love and if you accept what God's got for us. And I don't see how that translates to the God hates this person and the what you're doing is against God and all this different stuff. It does not make sense to me, and it kills me. I just want to go up to the people that have the signs, and I want to go up to the people that are claiming to represent the name of Christ and that are just tarnishing it. And I know that I don't do any better, and I know that I mess up on multiple occasions, so I can't pull the sign against the people who hold signs. But I want to go up to them and just ask them, where is it that you see the love of Christ being shown through what you're doing?
All right, now imagine for a moment that you're someone who doesn't believe that the love of Christ is something that can transform another human being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how else are you going to try and change society? If you don't believe that Christ's love, that God's love spoken into another human being is enough to actually change their heart and that they will begin to just exhibit characteristics of their Father now that they've gotten into a right relationship with Him, and that's not powerful enough to actually transform them, then what other recourse do they have?
You protest.
Pamphlets.
Yeah, exactly. You go against behaviors.
Now, hold on, Eric. Let's take this off the table of the specific church doing the works. Like, let's just look at it as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like that kind of behavior means exactly what you're saying. That you're saying that on the whole, we don't believe that. Otherwise, right, that wouldn't be our recourse.
Right.
Well, dang, that's just pretty simple. Mm-hmm. That's pretty straight up. I mean, here's actually what I thought after I read the story, I lack this too, like a certain amount of discernment that can see things for what they are, mm-hmm, right? We fight things five steps away from the source. We know what the source is, right? We know the source is Christ. We know that, right? But we get stuck in weird things like fighting moral behaviors. It doesn't matter what the moral behaviors are. They could be religious associated, like churchy behavior that's just irritating and beholden to the institution and holding up a religion that is not Christ, or it could be just outright against the Bible, disobedient, crazy sin, right? But we all know that the source and the solution comes from Christ, and we're still fighting in the weeds.
Well, not everyone's convinced that the source and the solution is going to come from Christ. That's why they're trying to do it themselves. And what that means is that they've somehow missed it. They've missed the gospel. They've, in their life, somehow they have missed how powerful God is, how powerful His love is. And so they've read a lot about it, but they just haven't experienced it, so they don't see that power. So what they need is someone to come to them, that even though they're from a very religious background, they need someone to come to them and essentially show them who God really is. So what an irony it would be is if it actually came from these girls in the strip club who actually come to the church because someone came to them and said, hey, here's a God who really loves you. If the people of that church finally experienced God's love because of this club that they've been protesting.
You know, it's funny, sometimes like the religious folks are just as closed to that idea as the people who are in a sinful, I don't want anything to do with God lifestyle, right? They're just as closed to, I hear what you're saying about the gospel, but I feel like these signs are really making headway. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know. But here's the thing, like, Herrick's right about that. I have a harder heart for people in the church situation than I do than people in the I don't know God situation, right? Like, I'm like, give them a chance. They don't know Christ. What do you expect? When really, I'm looking at the exact same behavior, you know, coming from you know, the body of Christ institution, and it's the exact same behavior. And I should be looking at both sides going, look, Jesus is missing in this picture somewhere, and actually everywhere. It's missing in the whole place. And so, actually, I suppose if you had to take something away from that story, my favorite part is to rail against the church folks and go, look, you're being outrageously religious here. But the truth of the matter is, like, they're missing the grace and comfort of God and the freedom that Christ gives them to not have to worry about everyone's morality at the time. You know what I'm saying? If you're worried about me, Paul says it kind of best, you know, I know Christ crucified. That's it. That's all I know. And that's what I'm standing on, and that's what I'm talking about, because, like, these moral discussions, like, I mean, he wasn't talking about it right in that context, but I mean, it kind of follows suit, right? If I know Christ crucified, and I know what was paid for me, and I know the grace that came with that, and I know the joy that you could be feeling. Let's talk about that. Because the other stuff is just it will go away on its own with the presence of God available.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you agree who Jesus is and you agree on his identity, there is no option but to submit to that, right? To submit to who he is and what he's calling you to. Someone had written, I can't remember what the context was on something I read on Facebook today, but it had to do with peripheral things that go on in the church. And one of the things they said was, you know, don't tell me to be Jesus, tell me about Jesus. And I thought, okay, I mean, yes, but no, because, like, Jesus is calling you to that. sometimes you stop short, right? You say, I just want to hear about this, but that's a you-centered theology that says, I came to be saved, not I came to have a Lord that also saved me. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, we start from the wrong premise, and then when we think we have the right premise, we glorify it. And then we don't move to the fact that, like, yeah, but Jesus actually called you to do something. He's calling you to be part of something, because if you submit to him as Lord, it will reflect in how you live your life. If all you wanted was a savior, then yeah, you can kind of get a picture of him on the wall, praise that, and then wait things out. And that's not really the life that he called us to. And it's just a weird distinction that sometimes people make is you got the guys from the church that are focused so much on looking like Christ that they forgot to talk to people about Jesus to begin with. Because you're not submitting to the identity of Christ. They're upset that someone who doesn't know Jesus isn't acting like Jesus, which is foolishness. On the other side of that, we get caught up in saying, I just want you to know Christ, and that's true. But to be honest with you, if you really know them, it will change your life. It has to. You cannot submit to someone else running your life and not have it change unless you yourself are also God. And you're not. So the submission to a Lord and Savior has an impact on your life. And it will change how you behave. And when we conflate either one of those two things, we end up not living in a kingdom, and we end up just trying to be saved from an earth. And I don't think we get a true picture of Christ or his kingdom through either one of those things. I can't do, I don't know, what would we do if a strip club protested our church? Like, what's the right answer, Mike? First, I don't think they would, because we wouldn't have protested them to begin with. What do? Just bring out the coffee?
I feel like we go talk to them. Say,
yeah,
hey,
good to say.
Hey. I'm sorry. What seems to be the beef?
We should send the ladies, because if they're protesting in a vulgar way, we should leave the guys inside. Send the ladies out with the coffee and the donuts and say, hey man.
Say, hey, what's up? I feel like you forgot your clothes. Here you go. We got more.
We got some choir robes that we don't use because we don't do that here.
We have some baptistry robes. Yeah. Hey, might as well baptize
in fact,
you. While
it's
here.
A little cold. You want to jump in the tub? Just got to say a few things.
I just,
that's the vision of the kingdom.
I feel like we're so bad at that. Like, I just feel like we're so bad at recognizing I don't know, the sin within ourselves compared with the sin with others. We're just so bad at recognizing that we're all part of the same creation, and that offer extends to everybody. We feel like when Christ began in that sanctification in us, that we're not there anymore. And so and it almost comes with it an inherent pomposity to it. You know, an inherent arrogance that I know something, I'm better off now. And those things are true. But like if you lose the heart to realize where you came from and the people that are still stuck there, like we just have a hard perspective that way. You know, to be able to look back and say there are people that are still without Christ, and like I don't remember what that feels like. I get shadows of it when I'm in a particularly disobedient time. But like I don't know what it fully means to feel alone and without that presence, you know? And so like without that perspective, we totally we separate ourselves into camps, and then we business plan it like it's us and them, and that's it's just not the truth.
Yeah, yeah, that's straight up foolishness. How did that happen, Herrick? How did we get here? What have we done with ourselves?
Penicillin in it. That's what done it. Penicillin. Ninja Turtles. I don't know. I'm out of options.
I mean, some of it, I guess, it goes back to a little bit what I was talking about is when the story of Jesus came to be for the person that was even trying to be virtuous about it to be the story of Jesus and me, it still wasn't about Jesus anymore, right? And it wasn't about his kingdom. It wasn't about his mission. It wasn't about Jesus reversing everything that fell. It was about Jesus and him coming to pick me up in his yellow cab and take me to heaven when things were done. And I suppose we can lose sight of the fact that we were once without Christ because we felt some sense of completion when we had Christ. And that was a misunderstanding of the completion, right? At the time that we thought, okay, step one is complete. I am saved. Now I have options as to how much I do after that point, as opposed to the thought that, I've been brought into a kingdom in which the work of Christ continues, and that is part of my responsibility living on heaven on earth today. And if I am not doing that, like, there is no sense of completion. But I think we saw it as a step one. One inch into the pearly gates and we're good. And then we'll just wait it out.
Yeah, I see a lot of just churches out there that will kind of fall into one or two camps. There are those that will just kind of continue on doing the pattern that they've always done, and they just they're pretty good about obedience. But as far as going out and proclaiming a message, they kind of drop the ball on that. On the other hand, there are churches that do a very good job of going out and proclaiming a message, but quite often the emphasis of the message is just trying to get you into some kind of a membership type of a deal. They'll explain the gospel in terms that might describe how Jesus has taken care of the sin in your life and presenting Jesus as a savior. And it's great. Jesus has saved you. Now what? And they don't really have an answer for that. The other churches do. They have a very good example of how to live and how to be obedient, but they just aren't going out with a message. Then you've got these churches that are going out with a message but don't really have that model of obedience and lordship.
Right.
If these two churches can get together and have this complete picture of Jesus where he is both a savior and he's a lord, then you have an answer to people of, all right, what do we do next?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Go see that guy. Yeah. He seems to know what's going on.
That's kind of the complete package. We want to know, first off, how does Jesus relate to me, but then also what do I need to do for him? So.
Right, because if you're describing Jesus correctly on how he relates to me, mm-hmm. it should naturally follow to be, okay, now what do I do for him?
Right, yeah.
It is not a, yes, now I know how Jesus relates to me, and now that I've been saved, I should put some work in as a thanks buddy. You know, he's not looking for a thanks buddy. Like, it's part of the package is to live in his kingdom. And to be honest with you, like, I don't know who's opting in for an eternity when living in his kingdom. Like, if you don't want to do that, then like the salvation, I'm not sure helps you. That's like someone like saving me into a vegetable store. And like, yeah, I mean, I might have an eternity free access to this vegetable store, but I sure as heck don't want it. Who wants to spend an eternity with the vegetable store? Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, Buva, quit protesting the ladies.
All right, I'm done.
Okay. Solid. We've solved the world's problems.
You guys won me over.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I am a 62-year-old male. My problem is I've never been married. And when I go on dates, women always want to know why I'm still single. Mm-hmm. The reasons are financial and also that I'm allergic to cats.
No, those are not the reasons.
Wait for it.
Wait, is that...
Sidebar, a lot of women own cats. Here we go.
Okay.
I have never made much money, and I live with my mom. Oh. I can't afford to move out, and even when I had a place of my own, it didn't make much difference. I'd like to be married, but this has become a catch-22. No one wants to marry me because I have never been married. I have looked this issue up online, and it is a huge problem. Women definitely discriminate against never married men. My wife didn't when we married. Sometimes I wonder if I should lie and say I'm a widower. Absolutely.
Yes, make up a dead wife.
What can I say to women who interrogate me about this?
Okay, ready?
Hey, listen. Sometimes the Lord has provided common grace for everybody, which is they don't have to marry you.
All right, here's a $30 investment. Get a wedding ring. Now go pick up some ladies. That might help.
My advice would be go and watch Failure to Launch. It has all the answers in it right there. Yeah.
This is you, just 40 years down the road. Holy cats. First of all, but you may perhaps have a, you know, a poor view of women. What do I tell these ladies when they interrogate me?
That's right. How do I tell them enough to get them to marry me?
No doubt your charm has swayed many a woman.
Cat women.
Women alive.
Women definitely discriminate against never married men. That is not true.
He's 62. When you get to that age, women just like you if you're breathing.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, they chase after the single guys.
Here's the thing. Like, I know guys that are like 45, 50-year-old bachelors, and I'm suspicious of them. I'm like, what have you done with you? I mean, seriously, what have you done?
Not to be crass, right? But like, let's say the problem they have with him is that he lives at home. He's 62 years old. His mom is not going to be around that much longer. Any self-respecting woman would be able to put that together and go, after she's gone, we get the house. We get to spend time together. So, like, all the barriers that he's proposed, I just don't think are legitimate barriers. I think he's a drooler.
Okay. Here's the thing. We know way too much about this man, and everyone's avoiding the obvious answer. He's not marriage material.
No.
Yeah. Here's the thing. He's allergic to cats. Uh-huh. He don't make any money. He lives with his mom. He wants to tell lies.
Yeah.
And he's more interested in convincing a woman to marry him instead of building it on some kind of foundation of trust, and we're going to do this life together.
Yeah.
I'll bet you he has about $7 million in his bank account. He's 62. He's lived an entire career. I don't care what his job was. He could be working at McDonald's, and you have no... You're living with your mom. You have no wife,
wouldn't
no children.
Wouldn't you find that? But I mean, what if he's a spendthrift? He doesn't have any money. And like he's basically spent it all on himself his whole life. Well,
on what?
Nothing.
He made it sound like he had tried to move out, right?
A Star Wars collection or something? I mean,
I didn't say that, Dan.
Comic books?
Don't make fun of Booba.
Invested in real estate back in 2005.
Hey, right, and it hit the bubble.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, and so our legitimate advice for him is to say...
You're single.
Yes. Yeah, you're not marriage material. Find other things that, I don't know, put joy into your life.
This is not a hobby. You're done. You're done with ladies forever.
Actually, I would say start by talking with God about your singleness, because you need to make peace with that.
Yeah.
At 62.
I'm not saying he's going to change that for you. I'm just saying he needs to help you make peace with this.
Yeah.
But if your basis of trying to get a lady is, what lie do I have to say to get her to marry me? You're not the man for any woman.
Right.
Should I make up a dead woman? Like, that's this guy. This guy goes, man, having a lot of trouble with ladies. You know, I could probably make up a dead one.
Maybe if they knew that someone died in my care, then they would absolutely want to marry me.
I bet I can get a kiss on the cheek if I said I got a dead Ethel. That'd be great.
He couldn't have thought that through. Hey, where's she buried?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
In the basement.
I'm not sure.
Where was your honeymoon?
What was she like? She had eyes and a shining personality.
Puppies. You know what? I don't like to talk about this. Makes me sad.
What's your favorite thing about her? She just was there.
She was really quiet.
She was my favorite. It's my sweetums.
She always helped me meet other people.
She had a cat, and now I just can't stand the sight of cats.
I can't stand the sight of cats.
And she never asked Ethel invasive questions.
She gave all of our money to her stepkids.
And she knew when to shut up.
Here's what secular says. Secular says, if you lie about the fact that you're a lifelong bachelor, at some point the truth will come out, and your credibility will be shot. That's why I'm advising you to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Your marital status is nothing to be ashamed of. Not everyone is meant to be married.
Correct. True.
You say you are 62 and live with your mom because you can't afford to live on your own. Has it occurred to you that you might not be able to afford being married? Also, marriage is a big adjustment for anyone, male or female. There's no guarantee that a person who has become set in his or her ways can successfully make that transition. This is not to say that you shouldn't have companionship, but you don't need a wife for that. A good friend or several could probably provide.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I don't disagree.
Yeah, that's fairly sad.
I'd be interested to know his response to that.
Guy's a winner.
I like him. Much.
All right, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, my husband of 30 years had an affair a year and a half ago. We struggled through the aftermath and are trying to restart our relationship. He remained in touch with the other woman until she finally pulled the plug on him, and now he has no interest in talking with me about our relationship or how to improve it. He is distant and refuses to say I love you. He doesn't initiate hugs or kisses. He will initiate sex every so often, but I'm usually the one who seems to need more contact. When I question him, he tells me everything is all right, and I am making a mountain out of a molehill. We have good times, but I really feel his lack of affection. I don't want to leave this man. I love him dearly and have for many years. Should I keep waiting for the renewal, or has my membership here relapsed, and I'm just kidding myself? Here's the deal. When the law came out, of the Old Testament came out, and it was actually kind of what we were talking about. It was based on morality and rules and things to identify sin, right? And then Jesus comes along and says, the things that I'm talking about are the things of the heart. So the sin itself is not the deal as much as it is as you know, your heart behind them. If you're even considering doing something in this manner, you're in sinful territory. And like this man, like what she is pointing out is that he got caught in the act of cheating on this woman, when in fact it appears that he is still emotionally, spiritually, and relationally still cheating on this woman.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that is not a marriage that she's describing, and so like it's funny how often that Jesus seems to just nail it right on the head. We're talking about We're talking about acts of the heart and not necessarily physical acts, and that's what she's holding on to, as if once the physical act was over with and the connection with that other woman was gone, you know, that now voila, you're back to a marriage, and that's not the deal. Like, I mean, now granted, she the marriage is absolutely worth saving. It's absolutely putting some time in, but like, she has to be able to see that for what it is first, right? It's the same thing with the church protest and the strip club, right? Like, you have to be able to see things for what they are. And what you're looking at is not a man who just fell off the wagon, accidentally physically cheated on her, right? Like, he has a pattern of behavior that supports a physical and emotional affair, right? And you have to be able to see that for exactly what it is and not think that the two are separate.
Yeah, he's checked out of the relationship, and it's going to take a lot of work. It took a long time to get there. It's going to take a long time to get to a healthy place, and he might come kicking and screaming, but boy, they need to talk a lot. They need some professional counseling. She's really got to win him back somehow. And I always go back to the scripture in Revelation, to go back and did what you did at first. Something she did lured him in, and she needs to kind of rekindle that whole thing. That's a lot of effort.
I think she can still seduce her husband. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she did it once.
Yep.
So your recommendation is seduce your husband?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. One of the defining difficulties of a marriage is just learning how to choose the person that you've already chosen, how to choose them again. It's like wake up every morning and once again choose that same person. And yeah. It's tough.
It's been 30 years for them.
Yeah. That advice is hard to swallow, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she was the one that was cheated on. Mm-hmm. She was the one that was wronged in this entire situation. And basically our advice is we're putting the onus on her to say, look, you need to win him back into the marriage. But mm-hmm. But like, if you look at it, like, that is a very strong picture. That's why that marriage picture of the relationship between Christ and his church is like that, right? Like, look at every example of people in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, with the nation of Israel, right? Like, look what God would show them. He's like, I will free you from oppression, and we're about to walk into the promised land, and all of a sudden, they don't trust him again. They're like, no, those guys are tall. We can't take over that city. We can't go in there.
There's a bunch of tall fellas in there.
Those guys are like tall. And I mean, I know you just destroyed the most powerful nation in the world right now and freed us out of slavery, but those guys are like 6'5", and we ain't going in there. You know, and so, you know, they walk the desert for a while, and God woos them back in. You know, like, he is making all the strides in this relationship, right? Christ made all the strides in his relationship with you, so you could even facilitate a relationship with Christ. And so, like, people look at marriage as like, I agree the husband has some deep repentance to go through and some trust to earn back, and that is going to be a very tough road for him. But, like, if you love him, you have to help him do that. And, like, I know that sounds hard and very unfair. I mean, I really. But I mean, if the love's there, that's how it's going to get done. It's not going to get done by you crossing your arms and being upset at him and kicking and screaming this thing. You know, like, it's going to be a lot of effort on your part, and it will be well worth it in the end. But, man, I understand that's hard advice to swallow. But, like, if you're looking at the picture of marriage, which is what the Bible puts forth as a metaphor for a Christ relationship with his church, he does all the moving even when we do all the sinning.
Right. I mean, that's the big thing, right? Like, when God could have easily pursued revenge, he pursued restoration. And you're doing the same thing. It's not that God wasn't, shouldn't have had the opportunity. He did. Like he was wronged. He was wronged as a God. But he sought restoration, not revenge. And the truth is that she was wronged here, but she has the option to seek revenge or restoration. And the advice would be to seek restoration, not because you're saying what he did was right, but because what he did was wrong. And you have the opportunity to try to bridge that gap of restoration. And you know, based upon what Mike was saying, I mean, he's still in sin because he has emotional and connections and relational connections with this woman that is keeping him from being intimate with his wife. But only continually seeking that restoration You know, that continues to have the opportunity to break that down, but calling it off or seeking the revenge basically cuts that off the past and says it cannot be restored. And that is in her hands. That is something that she has control over.
One of the most practical books I have read on relationships is Gary Smalley's Five Love Languages, and it really deals with relationships like this. And he would say in this book that his love tank is empty, and she needs to figure out what his love language his love language is and fill that tank back up. And it's pretty I love that book. I recommend it to a lot of people, and she needs to read that.
Secular's advice is, because you love him dearly and don't want to leave him, stay put. However, everything isn't all right, and you are not making a mountain out of a molehill. Your husband appears to be punishing you for something, and unless you get to the bottom of it, your relationship with him will remain icy cold. A licensed marriage counselor may be able to help you rebuild your relationship, but it won't happen unless he is willing to try. If he isn't, then you should go without him and let the therapist help you decide if this is the way you want to live the rest of your life. Yeah, that's fairly solid advice. I don't ever have a problem with people getting counseling.
I'd say a Christian counselor.
Yeah.
It's a different worldview than
secular. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, if you will print this, it would help pharmacy technicians everywhere.
Oh.
No, I don't want to read that. That's going to take forever. Forget it. No.
Oh, we refuse we to don't help care pharmacy about
the
technicians.
Now, here's the deal. I can't stand it when people use an advice column as a posting of here's what I think is the deal.
Yeah, right. They're not asking for help. They're hey, air my woes.
I've got help for you.
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I'm not much of a drinker. I have nothing against drinking or those who do. Good. I just do not like the taste of alcohol.
All right.
Worse, I have a very low tolerance for it. After only a half a glass of wine, I become so sleepy I can barely keep my eyes open. It makes me feel physically awful. My husband takes offense to the fact that I don't want to drink. When we're out with friends, he'll have three or four beers and pressure me to the point of embarrassment in front of them until I finally give in and order a glass of wine. Of course, I then spend the rest of the evening feeling terrible. When we get home, he'll want to be intimate, but I just want to go to sleep, which makes him even more upset. I've tried for several years to discuss this with him, but he can't explain why he does this. What can I do? I'd hit him. Yeah, I'd violence him.
Physical violence.
Yeah.
Or just everything. Say no. Just don't do it. Don't drink it.
No, I feel like I'd hit him. Here's the deal. He's embarrassing you on purpose.
Yeah.
That is not an honoring move at all. So if it was just one thing, be like, drink. No. Have some drinks. No, you should drink. No, I don't want to. Like at your own house, you can totally ignore him. But he's like going out of his way to make a fool out of you and embarrass you and not honor you in front of people. I'd hit him.
He's a buffoon.
He's obviously a buffoon. Who were these? I'd order the glass of wine and throw it at him.
Oh, there you go.
And then make him pay for it. Absolutely.
Okay, that's not great advice, Mike.
What do you mean?
I don't know. He seems like a bit of a... I mean, he's a bully.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so not only is he a bully, but I don't know. I mean, I could be reading into her voice a little bit too much, but, like, I don't know. It seems like she feels a necessity to comply to both the drinking and the intimacy. And so...
I'm sorry, what part of my advice was no good?
It is just because he's acting like a fool doesn't help the situation to escalate it by throwing wine
Why
in
his is
face.
That an escalation? He's not going to waste his money on another one. I've proved my point. The buck's got to stop somewhere.
Well, it could also stop with just a no.
Yeah.
That's a way to stand up to a bully.
No, I'm not going to do that. Oh, you really should, though. No. Oh, no, I'm not going to.
What if he's not as buffoonery as you're saying? What if he gets oppressive about it? Then you throw it at him.
No.
When can I throw it at
him? No, it is never a good idea. If he amps it up, your job is to escalate it further. You're an idiot.
What actions does he have to take so I can throw this at him?
You never get to throw it at him.
What is this crap?
It's off the table. Your pseudo-violence is off the table.
I'm going to protest the bar.
Crap. Oh, man, I'm disappointed not only this man, but any friends they may be hanging out with who also, like, tolerate this idiocy.
Yeah, that's pretty awkward to sit around.
I don't know, but people put up with that stuff all the time. You ever hang out with a married couple where they're bickering back and forth? You don't ever, like, stick your two cents. Hey, man, you should be nicer to your wife.
Yeah, it's really kind of none of your business. I mean,
you're just
kind of
sitting there going,
she's a big girl. She can say no.
I don't know. I would say that if I thought the guy was overbearing. If I had a friend that was being overbearing with his wife, I would most certainly would say something about that.
Well, you wouldn't throw nothing at him, huh?
I would not throw anything at him, no.
Well, good to know. I'm going to run my yap all I want. And the worst I'm going to get from Ben is a good verbal tongue lashing.
I'll hit you.
And you get to go home and be intimate.
Hey, Ben might yell at me, boo-hoo.
Practical advice for this woman?
This guy's a jerk. Stop going out with him.
It's her husband.
I don't care. That doesn't mean you have to go out with him.
Now, here's the deal. I would
I
be supportive.
Kind of right on that.
I would be supportive and not leaving the house.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If this guy is refusing to be an adult, is refusing to be in a relationship with a woman, and is refusing to honor her, then she needs to get herself out of that situation. And I'm not saying get herself out of the situation by leaving the guy, because obviously talking to him is not working. Stop going out with him. If when you go out, he's oppressive, he's being a bully, he's badgering you to the point of embarrassment in front of your friends aren't going to stick up for you, don't go out. Tell him no, because ultimately, every time, this is what happens. I'm not going out with you again, because what you're going to do is you're going to have your 3 or 4 beers, you're going to badger me about drinking, even though you know it makes me physically ill, and I don't enjoy doing it. I'm not going out with you.
Yeah, arm candy ain't free. Mm-hmm. You have to treat me well, yeah. All right? Leave
Respect me, honor me, I will spend time with you. Do not, don't do those two things. You do not get time with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, I'm on with Boova's advice. I think that's right. When handle it, just don't go.
Flag the tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flag the tape. Boova's right. Here we go. Here's secular advice. Your husband is a drinker. He may be self-conscious about the amount he imbibes and feels less so if he has a drinking buddy.
That's probably true.
That's you.
That's true.
Willing or not.
He's not exactly a heavy drinker.
Oh, she says he does this after 3 or 4 beers. He doesn't say that's the end of it. Just after 3 or 4, he starts to be a rhino. To say the least, his behavior is inconsiderate, and I mean all of it. When someone is involved with a problem drinker, and from your description of his behavior, your husband is one, the place to start looking for answers is Al-Anon. To find a meeting close to you, go to Al-Anon.org. Please do not wait.
Hmm. Oh, the recommendation is that she go to the Al-Anon meetings?
Yeah. Say, look, I ain't going drinking with you, but I'll go to Al-Anon and find out what's your deal.
Maybe you can join me.
I'm sure that'll be received well.
Yeah.
When is bringing up sin in someone's life ever goes over very well?
I don't know, but that's like saying, hey, I don't have any problems, but you do, and I'm gonna go learn more about it.
And yeah. Learn how to not help you with your problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that's bad advice. I don't know. I'm hesitant. What that does. Maybe both. Maybe a combination of both. Don't go out with him, and while you're supposed to be out with him, go to the Al-Anon meeting.
Go to the Al-Anon meeting.
I'm not convinced he has a drinking problem. I think he's just a jerk.
Yeah.
It's an insensitive...
Have you ever known jerks that are less of a jerk after they got drunk?
I don't have enough experience.
We're just amplifying the fact that he's a jerk.
Yeah. We can't assume the fact that he's a drinker and a heavy drinker to the point that he's got a serious problem. We can't assume that he's a jerk and he has seriously bad actions.
Yeah.
We know based off the facts that she's given us is that he has a crap attitude. Whether it's a huge drinking problem or whether he's just a general jerk.
Yeah, I feel like if he had a drinking problem, she might have mentioned that outside of the context, right? Like if your husband, if that's the underlying issue,
she's honoring her husband and doesn't want to spread his drinking problem over the paper.
But she's willing to spread the rest?
Yeah. It's not like his name's in it.
Yeah.
She needs to have him memorize Ephesians 6.
I think we all need
husbands love your wives.
Ephesians 6.
Yeah.
Isn't that 5?
I think it's Ephesians 5.
Isn't that 6:1? Oh, that's the children. You're right.
Yeah.
This is really awkward.
Yeah.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night from 10 to...
Whenever. That's awesome.
10 to 11.
Yeah.
Here we go. We got time for one more here. Dear Live from the Path, my boyfriend and I recently decided to get married. We plan to go to the courthouse next month and have a justice of the peace perform the ceremony.
Sweet.
Since it will be nothing fancy, we have decided to invite just a few family members, his mom, grandma, and brother, along with my mom and dad. What we need advice about is how to tell his mom. She feels that marriage is just a piece of paper, and you shouldn't need it to prove how committed you are. Because of her views, he wants to surprise her the day of the wedding when we all arrive at the courthouse. I feel it's a bad idea, and she should have some time to get used to the thought of us being married. Any advice you can offer on when to tell her and how to handle what she's going to say?
I feel like I don't have enough context here.
Yeah,
I just like to surprise mom with my marriage.
Yeah. Mom says marriage is just a piece of paper, and you shouldn't have to have it to be able to prove.
Well, fine, mom can have that feeling. This is her son, and her son wants to get married. Deal with it. I don't think we have enough context when it comes to, hey, how's mom going to react to this, and what's the best way? We don't know enough about her, but I can just tell you, ultimately, it's you and your husband's decision, and you shouldn't be super catering to the mom. Because she's not going to have any kind of catering other than you just not getting married.
I hear what you're saying, Boova, but I mean, like, you know, there's certain members of your family that, you know, like, what you can be right, But, like, the consequences are not as small as you're saying.
What I'm saying
really makes your life rough.
So, based off of the mom's idea of this is just a piece of paper, you don't need this to prove your commitment, there's no appeasing her on those thoughts other than not getting married. Her view is to not get married.
Yeah.
So, to appease her would be to not get married.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, there's going to be consequences no matter what.
I
say we protest.
Yeah, I say we picket. And, yeah.
The question is do you let her ruin the 3 days before the wedding, or let her just ruin the wedding? I just let her ruin the wedding, tell her to surprise, hey, let's go out to lunch.
They're not having her, she is or is not invited to the JP?
She's invited.
She's invited.
So she's going to get there, it's like, what am I doing at the JP?
Yeah.
And then realize, birth records.
Oh, no, Brian's getting married.
Yeah, she's going to figure that out.
They'll be like, let's not put the barista close to the JP.
What kind of dunce woman is this? They can't figure out. We're going to the courthouse.
Why are you dressed so fancy?
They didn't say how they were going
to
do it.
I've been indicted, Mom. Just come to the courthouse on Thursday.
Come on.
So it's going to be a surprise, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the ceremony looks like.
I would just not have her. Just don't have her go.
Nah. I mean, let her know ahead of time and just, you know, stick to your plans.
Just say, hey, we're getting married on Tuesday. If you want to show up, great. If not.
That's a good thought is, you know, Mom, we're getting married. That's going to happen no matter what. If you'd like to be there, we'd love to have you. But I know your thoughts on this, and you do not have to be.
Yeah. Otherwise, you can just meet at the old country buffet afterwards.
Hey,
yeah.
Exactly.
I don't understand her problem with this JP wedding. She's just
like marriage in general.
If it's just a piece of paper, that's pretty much what you're getting. Like, you've eliminated all the frivolity.
Yeah,
you've applied for a tax document. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this woman should agree with this.
Well, yeah, but the woman's going to try and talk them out of this tax document, essentially.
I don't understand that position.
There's a financial obligation involved in it in case of divorce.
They didn't talk about whether they had a prenup or not. I don't know. Like, I get people.
Something tells me they don't have a prenup.
I would just guess. I've seen people argue against marriage from like emotional connections to people. But, like, never to say, hey, we want to be connected, but we don't want the tax benefit. Like, that just seems like a weird angle to be all in the hot and bothered about. If it's sacred to you, then it should be more. If it's not sacred to you, the least you can get out of it is a tax document. I just don't understand this woman's position.
I agree.
There's no rationality in her thinking.
That's why the question is, do you just spring it on her and so her unpredictable behavior can be confined to one day? Or do you tell her ahead of time and let her go ape crazy for 3 days?
I don't get the point of telling her ahead of time. Like, why not just tell her after it's done? What does it matter? If she doesn't care about it at all, I just don't... What do you... That seems like your own consolation.
Because there might be a difference between what she says she believes and what she actually believes.
Well, that could be
true
for anybody.
Come on, you've met women.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So she might say, it's no big deal, and then later on it's like, oh, I wish I had been invited. But, you know...
Well, then, Mom, you shouldn't have said marriage was just a piece of paper.
That's assuming a level of maturity that you can't always.
How old is this woman?
She's 62. Her son still lives with her.
Hey, we know a single 62-year-old guy.
That's right. I can marry you off right now.
All right, secular advice.
Secular says, I agree that your boyfriend's mother should be told beforehand, and the good news should be delivered by both of you. When she delivers the predictable marriage is just a piece of paper comment, you should respond that the piece of paper is an important one to you and your boyfriend. Tell her that she's doing this because he loves you, and in the event that anything should happen to him, he wants to provide for you. If she gives you an argument, remember that you're asking for her blessing.
What? That was a dumb explanation. You can provide for someone without being married to them.
Hey, it's not my advice, Ben. Were you going to let me finish it now?
Yeah.
Not her permission. Done.
You've been listening to Life from the Path, and thanks for hanging out with us this week. Hey, if you're on the podcast, you get a break this week. Nothing else going on. We're going to let you go. If you're on KTA, we're going to let you go. Thanks for hanging out with us on Live for the Path. We hope to see you next week.